In Trinidad and Tobago, the name Robocop doesn't just conjure images of a movie cyborg. It invokes fear, loyalty, and silence. Selwyn Robocop Alexis wasn't a politician. He wasn't a police officer. Yet in the volatile heart of Enterprise Chaguanas, he wielded more power than either. Locals said he was a man of the people, a street general who handed out back-to-school bags, paid rent for struggling mothers, and ensured safety in his turf. But behind the goodwill was a criminal machine fed by drug routes, gambling dens, and underground arms deals. By day, he ran his business. By night, he ran the streets. He was loved. He was feared. And then, he was executed in a hail of bullets, sitting outside his shop like it was just another Tuesday. But who pulled the trigger? And more importantly, who gave the order? This story isn't about a gangster. It's about the vacuum left when the state fails and how power flows to the man most willing to use it. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Empire of Enterprise wasn't always synonymous with bloodshed and chaos. Located on the outskirts of Chaguanas, it was once just another growing urban district. Dense, restless, alive. But in the late 1990s and early 2000s, the cracks began to widen. Poverty surged. Young men disappeared into gangs. And state neglect made the area ripe for someone to step in and take control. That someone was Selwyn Robocop Alexis. Born in Trinidad and Tobago, Selwyn didn't grow up with dreams of being a criminal, at least not according to the people who knew him. They say he was intelligent, quietly ambitious, and good with money. A hustler, yes, but not a thug. He had an instinct for commerce, and when he opened his mini-mart in the heart of Enterprise, it quickly became more than a place to buy groceries. It became his headquarters. But business, in Enterprise, was about more than profit. It was about protection, survival, and visibility. Robocop's shop was guarded like a fortress. Armed lookouts, bulletproof glass, and surveillance cameras pointed in all directions. Yet people still came. Mothers, grandmothers, children in uniform. And if they didn't have enough for food, Robocop made sure they left with something anyway. To some, that was charity. To others, it was strategy. The dual life. Outside the shop, Selwyn had another persona, part street diplomat, part crime lord. He brokered truces between feuding gangs, dealt with threats internally, and managed a network of loyal men who were as quick with a smile as they were with a firearm. Robocop's power grew not just because he was feared, but because he was needed. The official police presence in Enterprise was thin. When violence broke out, residents didn't call 999, they went to Robocop. He was the kind of man who could have you shot for theft by sunrise, or have your rent paid by noon. You never knew which version you were going to meet. He was also a man of contradictions. He would quote scripture while loading a weapon. He'd buy new uniforms for children on Monday, then allegedly oversee a drug shipment by Friday. Some called it hypocrisy. Others called it survival. By the early 2010s, his legend had outgrown his turf. Reporters started circling. Politicians whispered his name behind closed doors. The police made a few arrests, raided a few of his properties, but nothing stuck. Witnesses never testified. Evidence mysteriously disappeared. One officer said off the record, "Robocop's file is thicker than a Yellow Pages." But no one wants to turn the last page. The business of crime, Robocop's real empire, wasn't his shop. It was his hold over illicit trade. He controlled major drug trafficking routes that passed through central Trinidad. Cocaine and marijuana shipments that entered through ports like Port of Spain and Point Lisas were funneled through Enterprise under his supervision. He allegedly collected fees from smaller crews who wanted safe passage or protection. And when disputes arose, Robocop was judge, jury, and sometimes executioner. Then there was gambling. Illegal games of chance popped up across Chaguanas, from video poker machines to full-blown underground casinos. It's said that nothing ran without RoboCop's cut. His lieutenants collected, enforced, and punished, but he remained at the top, mostly invisible, mostly clean, and he was smart about it. He funneled money into legal businesses, owned cars in other people's names, built homes with cash, not credit. One senior investigator described it as corporate crime with a bandit face. Firearms were another matter. Gunfire was common in enterprise. But RoboCop's men were always armed with the latest weapons. Police found AK-47s, Glocks, and ammunition stashes linked to his crew. Some say his connections went all the way up to corrupt customs officers and foreign suppliers. But proving it, that was another story. He'd been arrested a few times, charged once or twice, but he walked every time. A gangster's community. And yet, for all the violence, for all the blood, Selwyn RoboCop Alexis was still loved by many. He sponsored community events, paid for funerals, helped teens find jobs. He handed out groceries during Eid and Christmas. On Facebook, people wrote things like, RoboCop fed my children when the government couldn't. Say what you want, but he kept enterprise safe. Even his critics admitted he filled a vacuum left by a failing welfare state, underfunded police, and politicians who only showed up during elections. To many, RoboCop wasn't the problem. He was the solution. Still, others saw through the facade. They knew what his gifts really were: loyalty payments. His generosity kept mouths fed, but also kept lips sealed. No one talked to police. No one testified. Because if you did, you disappeared. The state responds, too late. By 2015, things were shifting. Violence in enterprise was escalating. Turf wars, drive-bys, young men dying weekly. RoboCop's name appeared in more intelligence briefs, more media reports. The Trinidad and Tobago Police Service launched an enterprise-wide crackdown. They raided houses, seized weapons, and detained suspects. But RoboCop stayed calm. He even gave interviews. Said he wasn't a gangster. Said he just wanted peace. Still, something had changed. His enemies were growing bolder. A splinter gang, once allied with him, began carving its own territory. Gunfire echoed near his business more often. People began asking, was RoboCop losing his grip? That answer came on July 17, 2016. Selwyn RoboCop Alexis was sitting outside his business in Enterprise, unarmed, relaxed, almost like he didn't believe anyone would dare. That belief cost him his life. Chapter 2. The Fall of RoboCop. The day RoboCop died was unusually still. No sirens, no warning, just a flurry of bullets that ripped through the humid air of Enterprise, cutting down a man who had once seemed untouchable. He was seated in a plastic chair in front of his store, something he did often, a show of dominance, of control. Some said he used to brag, if they want to kill me, they have to do it in the open. That's exactly what happened. Multiple gunmen exited a nearby vehicle. Eyewitnesses said they were masked, heavily armed, and methodical. They opened fire without hesitation, targeting only RoboCop. His body was hit more than 20 times. He died instantly. The attackers vanished just as quickly as they arrived, but no one screamed, no one chased. The community stood still, because when a king falls, his subjects freeze. The aftermath. The Trinidad and Tobago Police Service arrived within minutes. Yellow tape was rolled out. Photos snapped. But the real investigation was already being buried beneath whispers, rumors, and silence. No witnesses, no license plates, no working CCTV, despite the dozens of cameras RoboCop had installed. Nothing concrete, just one glaring truth. Someone wanted him gone, and they succeeded. His funeral drew crowds, not just from Enterprise, but from across Central and South Trinidad. Men in dark shades, women in black dresses, young boys who looked like they were learning the script of gang life early. There were eulogies, but not many tears. The streets went quiet for weeks, and then violence erupted. Who killed RoboCop? That question became the obsession of media, police, and rival gangs alike. There were theories. Some said it was a rival outfitting enterprise, a group that had once worked under RoboCop but wanted full control of drug turf and gambling lines. Others whispered about a betrayal, an inside job, maybe even someone from RoboCop's own circle who grew tired of living in his shadow. When you're the boss for too long, even your protégés become your threat. Still others pointed fingers at corrupt politicians or rogue officers, people who may have once used RoboCop for favors and wanted him silenced before he talked too much. But no arrests were made, no suspects named. Enterprise, like always, kept its secrets. The battle for his throne. In the months that followed RoboCop's death, chaos reigned. Without his iron grip, smaller crews fought for dominance. The streets of Enterprise turned into a war zone. Homes were shut up, businesses shuttered. Innocents died in crossfire. And with each gunshot, the myth of RoboCop grew. Even in death, he was blamed for the violence, or praised for the order he once maintained. His lieutenants either vanished, were killed, or tried to carve out their own empires. But none could replicate his reach or his charisma. Community elders begged the government for help. They called for social programs, job creation, intervention. Some even said bitterly, "We need another RoboCop." That's how deep the state's absence ran. Legacy, our lie. In Trinidad and Tobago, RoboCop remains a polarizing figure. To his defenders, he was a modern-day Robin Hood, a protector, a necessary evil, a man who kept order in a place where order had collapsed. To his critics, he was a parasite, someone who fed off poverty, peddled poison to children, and used handouts to silence dissent. But both groups agree on one thing. He filled a role the state refused to play. His name is still etched into the psyche of Enterprise. Murals bear his face. Young men still drop his name for clout. And some parents still tell their children, "Don't talk too loud. RoboCop people might be listening." But Enterprise has moved on, and the new kings don't wear crowns. They wear masks, a nation's reflection. RoboCop's life and death weren't just about one man. They were a symptom of deeper rot, of a system that lets criminal leaders become community leaders. He was created by poverty, enabled by corruption, sustained by silence, and in the end, destroyed by the same violence he once commanded. So what do we do with that legacy? Do we mourn him, condemn him, or simply pretend he never existed? Because when the line between gangster and government disappears, how do we know who's really running the streets?